This episode is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is a marketplace connecting podcasters to a variety of podcast sponsorship opportunities, such as interview segments, topical discussions, and more. We utilize Podcorn because it easily allows us to browse opportunities on the website and work with brands directly without any exclusivities. Access Podcorn to help support your podcast by signing up at podcorn.com/podcasters.
For interested Academy members, developers, and publishers, submissions are now open for the 24th Annual DICE Awards, the premier peer-reviewed celebration of the best in interactive entertainment. Make sure to submit your 2020 game for consideration by Wednesday, December 16th at 5 p.m. Pacific. For more information, go to interactive.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Game Maker's Notebook. I'm your host, Robin Hunneke, here today with the amazing, terrifying jellyfish, TJ Hughes. Today we talked about creativity, the passion to break into this industry, and how TJ has begun to navigate towards shipping a commercial game about food and the joy of eating through the practice of art and community building. A really inspirational story that really lifted my spirits in a relatively strange time. I'm really excited to be able to introduce you to TJ, his fantastic attitude, wonderful colors in his fashion, and most importantly, his incredible ideas about breaking in the value of constraints and learning how to do this in a community of practice. Here he is.
Welcome to the Game Maker's Notebook, a podcast featuring a series of in-depth one-on-one conversations between game makers providing a thoughtful, intimate perspective on the business and craft of interactive entertainment. The Game Maker's Notebook is presented by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, a member-driven organization dedicated to the recognition and advancement of interactive entertainment.
Host today with TJ Hughes of Terrifying Jellyfish, his alias, and the way that he makes games is going to be the subject of this podcast. TJ comes to us. He's a new addition to the games industry, and he's getting ready to work on a title on PS5. We're going to talk a little bit about him getting started and what he's offering, which is really, truly rad, and get to know him a little bit. Welcome to the show, TJ.
Thank you so much. Hello, hello.
How are you?
I am well. It's just great to be on the show.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here with us today. I wanted to get started a little bit by asking you, why did you come to the games space? Because it's not always a super safe space and it's not always welcoming. And I certainly, when I started, I kind of felt like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it in the space. It feels like it can have a lot of gatekeepers and a lot of, you know, external forces that keep you out. What made you decide to come and join us?
It kind of just happened naturally. It kind of just made a lot of sense. In both coming to the game space and also just choosing games as a medium, games was something I grew up with, and it was something that I've always been fascinated with. And like, whenever someone would ask like, oh, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like, I would always say, oh yeah, game designer. Not thinking that I could actually do it, but just being like, whoa, that would be so cool, right? As getting older, finding sort of what mediums like strike me the most. I've just always been interested in games, and so I don't know. I had this kind of drive to like make these like visions that I would see in my head just kind of manifest them, and games seemed like the best way to do that. Just they're interactive, and I just have so much control over just the entire experience. And so I don't know, it gives me something that a lot of mediums kind of can't really offer. So So I just like decided to trudge through all the any negative element of the game space. I was just like, okay, whatever. We're just doing this.
That's really great. Did you start off by making games yourself by yourself? Did you go to a game jam? Did you study games? Like what was the way that you decided to sort of begin to sort of build out your vision, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, I started by procrastinating doing essays during high school. I would just Google stuff about game design. it really just started out as a genuine interest. Just one day I just found out about Unity because I was playing this game called Paradise Paintball on one of the computers in my school's like Mac lab, and yeah, I just like clicked the little info icon. It was like made in Unity. I was like, "Oh, cool. What's that?" And so I just Googled it, and I was like, "Whoa, you can just download it for free." Then I had no idea what I was looking at, so I was just like, "Okay, how to use Unity at Google?" And so I found a little FPS tutorial that taught me some things. I made like the dinkiest little like Unity FPS, like back when in the day when that was like the popular thing, was just seeing a bunch of dinky little Unity FPS games. And I would say my college course was kind of like doing game jams. Like I did Ludum Dare back in the day, just like completely on a whim. I was just like, I don't know if I can actually do this or if I know enough, but let's go. And so that's actually how I made my first Ludum Dare is how I made my first released game called Fish. It's out on Steam, and I made it in like 2016. It was great.
Or
like
that's awesome. When I
finished it. Yeah.
So when you decided to start with Ludum Dare, did you feel like, did you know people in the industry then, or were there people that you knew locally or even like on a forum that were supporting you, or were you just like straight up like, I'm going to just do this by myself?
All I knew was just some game developers on Twitter, and that was about it. Like I had like two friends around me who were interested in game development, like in high school, and so they were definitely really encouraging. But yeah, other than that, I didn't really have any sort of sense of community. Just like kind of just one, being a kid in high school, and like two, just being in a small city. Like I just didn't know if there was anyone else like just interested in the same thing or doing the same thing. And so, yeah, for a long time I felt sort of isolated.
Yeah.
Just like in this pursuit. And which was like fine too. I didn't really I didn't feel like I needed someone else to be there along with me. Cause I was just like, okay, I'm doing this whether it makes sense or not.
Well, it was a medium for you. So you were exploring the medium, and that's what an artist does, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's funny because we always associate games with community, but I think one of the reasons I'm asking you this is because it is, if you think about it as an artistic medium, it's not like everybody who goes to Blick, you know, to get like some brushes and an easel and some canvases has a huge community of people saying, yeah, do it. Right. I mean, it's the desire to create that often drives us. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of the fact that no one else really was doing it almost made it even more exciting for me. Cause I was just like, okay, like I'm going to come out with something that, and folks are going to be like, how did you do that? Like what even does that? And then like a lot of times that would be the response. I was just like, wait, you can just like make games. And I was like, yeah, dude, you just like Google it and download this thing. And yeah, you can just do it. And so, and it was wild to have that attitude about it too, because like I remember having this moment like with my game development dream and being like, oh wow, I'm bad at math. I'm never gonna be able to pursue this dream, am I? Like, oh no. Like I remember having this whole moment, like just not being able to fathom like how I could ever like do this. But then when I actually got into it, it's just like, okay, like these are programs designed by humans, and humans would hopefully make sense to you, or like make it to where it's like at least somewhat accessible to someone. And so yeah, it's just like if you take it step by step and like just think about things like with just an open but logical mindset, it's just like, oh yeah, like kind of anyone can approach it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm very, very old compared to you. I'm 23 years older than you almost now. But when I started in computer science, it was the same way. You could pick up a Mac and start programming, and you could use HyperCard or SuperCard, and you could build little programs and interactive stuff. And I remember thinking the same thing, like, wow, this is great. Yeah, like why isn't everybody doing this? And it turns out that it's a unique desire to sort of wrestle with the machine and make it do what you want. So I guess I want to ask you, like, when you were working on as it was Fish, what did you struggle to accomplish with that title? What were you looking at in that space? What were you trying to express?
Yeah. So kind of starting with like the like dinky little Unity FPS tutorials and stuff like that. It made you really want to make like the biggest, most amazing game that you could, like, because just being such a like just naive young person, I was just like, yo, I'm gonna make a game that's like Call of Duty, Left 4 Dead, except it's like an MMO and there's zombies everywhere. And it's basically, what was it? H1Z1 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm basically going to make that game on my own and just like have there be online and just all these things that I for sure could not have done. But just like, it's just like when your imagination goes crazy, just like your ambition knows no bounds. But like doing a game jam and making that first little arcade game, that kind of made me realize like just how important and how valuable constraints are. Like just being like, okay, I'm gonna only do this much and I'm gonna stop here, sort of thing. And that just like taught me so much, because just there's a lot that you can't do without just like a huge team or without like the plugins necessary, just the resources. Like I had no resources. Like that first game I released with like putting basically no money into it, like no marketing or anything.
Yeah.
And the like the music in the game, that was my friend in high school, Matt Austin. He just was like, hey, yo, I'll make some games I'll make some songs for you real quick. And he just like whipped some stuff up and it was like really cool. And that was our first collab and it was amazing.
That's really great, because it allowed you to create something for yourself with some limitations, but then it also did open the door to collaboration, which is one of the things I think that games can do really well. If you get past that first hurdle of like wrestling with the machine and figuring out how to make it do what you want, and then you can just kind of tap a friend for some art or like in your case, some music, it creates a relationship with other people that's also really interesting, right? I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like closer than just a friendship when you collaborate on something creative.
Yeah, definitely. And for some reason, for a while, it felt like the game scene was trying to be like anti like collaboration, anti like, I don't know, it just had, the game space at the time had this huge attitude of like do it yourself and like do everything yourself, where like it was like really rewarding these one man army type teams and stuff, and which like that's kind of what I thought I had to be and sort of what I had to be in some ways, just because there was no one around me kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, because when I was first getting started, there were folks around me saying just like, oh yeah, no, don't use Unity, like make your own engine or just like do it all custom. Yeah,
worst advice ever for finishing a game.
Literally the worst advice ever. It's just
don't
like,
listen to that guy. Don't listen to that guy.
And I did it. And like, I eventually, like I remembered the phrase, like just reinventing the wheel and just that whole concept of just like, I don't know, just like we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. So it's just like, what is the point of like just going backwards? You know, it's just like, use what's already there, just build on top of that. Like, it's already amazing that we have what we have. Like, why not use it? You know, it's just like the human beings in general, like we build off of the wisdom of the previous generation. So it's just like technology is not exempt from that, you know? So,
You know, it's actually, I think it's actually an interesting question, because it seems to me it's actually sort of built into the very fabric of computer science education and engineering cultures. A lot of the time is this idea that if you didn't make it, it isn't good enough, or, you know, it has to be made here in order to be at quality or whatever. But I actually think maybe that comes more from the fact that working on someone else's engine or in someone else's tools requires a lot of archaeology and patience, you know, like looking at stuff that you didn't make and figuring it out from the beginning. And I think some people are much more likely to enjoy the process of building it themselves so that they don't have to do that work, which is, I think, one of the reasons that we do have sometimes very independent-minded and anti-collaboration folks in the communities, because they feel that they have to do it right their own way. And that's something that we can start to work through as a culture of developers. I don't know.
Yeah. And if it's like, if you can do that sort of thing, it's just like, you do you, honey, like you go ahead, like you do that, make your own engine. Like, cause it's like, I know some people, like I've been following some people on Twitter who honestly can do that. Like, yep, I just built my own engine, like this whole like voxel based ray marching, whatever. And it works and I'm able to make my game in it. I'm just like, you know what? good for you. Good for you. Like, yeah, you're an amazing wizard and you could probably go get a PhD. Like, but that's amazing. Like, go ahead. But I just know that I want to just make my game. I want to put all my ideas in it. I want it to match my sort of aesthetic. I just want to tell my story and move on. Like, I do not need to learn the whole process of like creating an engine. Like, the tools out there are good enough for me. I just want to make my little crazy food game.
So tell me like about the journey that you had from making your very first game to getting to the concept of Nor.
Yeah. It was a wild process because I've always been interested in just sort of like alternative art and just like kind of more niche things. But I never really thought, I could see myself going in the direction of just like experimental games, like just weird experimental games, but haven't really done so. Like, my first starting out project was just, once again, dinky FPS, like the most generic thing you could think of, but still I had like different ideas of how to approach it. And so after kind of making my first game, I made that and released that. And then I was hired at a game studio local to St. Louis, Happy Badger Studio. Shout out to them. Like, they really got me started.
That's great.
Yeah, that was huge for me. Just like meeting other people, like getting the experience of working on a team. They brought me to my first GDC, like the Game Developers Conference.
And what year was that?
That was like... 2015. That was 2015.
Cool.
That they first brought me there. Yeah, and it was an amazing experience. I was just like, whoa! It's like all the people I know from Twitter, except they're like here. Like, it was just the craziest thing for me. And just being like, I was 19 at the time.
Who did you meet? Who were the people that you met at your first GDC?
Gosh, I remember the first person I ran into that I knew from Twitter was Kale Bradbury. Like, shout out to them. I don't think we've interacted in a while, but like that was like such a huge moment for me. I was just like, whoa, I know your work from the internet, and we like recognized each other. It was just like, whoa, this is crazy. Cause for the longest time, it just seemed like such a remote thing. Like, are these even real people that I'm kind of talking to about just game development and like showing my work off to? Like,
yeah.
And so it was just a wild experience. And yeah, just like from there made so many connections. Just multitudes of connections. Just kind of everyone you see in the indie game scene on Twitter. Just like, just meeting them in person just really kind of boosted me. And just like seeing how nice everyone was too. Like, I feel like it was pretty really surprising. Like, I don't know, it was really surprising to me. I was just like, yeah, everyone here is like really inviting at least in the indie scene I saw.
So. Yeah, totally. I mean, my first GDC was in 2000, and I remember, or maybe even 1999. And I remember I was part of a workshop that was just a group of small indie developers or people that were kind of hackers and wanted to do, you know, eventually build game jams, essentially. And meeting people like Lord British or, you know, the two guys behind Magic, you know, like Richard and Scaff. I was like, wow, I can't even believe I'm talking to these guys. Like, they literally have changed my life. Like, I've played thousands of hours of Magic, you know? And so for me, it was the similar feeling of like, I can't believe these people are real, but that feeling that they were kind is so the reason that I did end up going into games. And it's really great to know that 13 years later, it's still happening, right? Because it can be really intimidating to meet your heroes, especially if, like, you know, if you're into rock music and you go meet your band, or, you know, you're really into hip hop and you know, like, you meet MF Doom behind stage or whatever, like, you don't know, are they going to be cool or are they going to be weird, you know? And like, for the most part, you know, I have to say, I believe that most, especially indie game developers, is like really nice people.
Yeah, that's been my experience. And going back to the kind of rock stars example, yeah, like there's just so many examples of like, oh, you meet the person and just like your expectations kind of fall flat. But just, yeah, there's, I don't know, just people in the game scene can be just so nice and so inviting. And so, I don't know, just like keep that energy going, I guess, is what's important.
It really is. And so you're there, you're meeting people, you're working for this company, and you get back to St. Louis, and were you immediately like, I'm going to strike out on my own? Or like, how did it happen?
Yeah. Well, I first got the like post-con blues. Like, you know, have you ever experienced those?
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah, yeah. So like at first it was that of just like, wow, it's not nearly as exciting here. And so I was just kind of like, wow, I'm just going to like insert myself into these spaces and just like kind of try to fit in. Like of course, not like compromising my own like personality or like vision or anything. I'm just like, I'm gonna just try to see just like how far I can get and just like where I can go. And so yeah, I don't know, it just really drove me to just like chase this. And and so yeah, kind of just after working with a team, like the local team that I got hired at, I don't know, I've just been like, my entire life was kind of just games. It was just like, okay, go to my 8-hour a day job, like kind of talking about games, working on games, and working on a few other stuff too. Like they also did like a bunch of client projects and stuff like that. But
yeah, so get the experience, you know, in the 9-to-5, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then come home and then work on my little side projects too. Like just games was my entire life, just playing them, making them for like professionally and also like just on the side. Like, so yeah, I don't know. It's just like, I had the main and side hustle both be games. Like it's quite an interesting time, but
it's a lot of games.
It's a lot of games, but it really, it just gave me all the experience that I needed. Like it gave me so much experience, and like, it was, I don't know. I was just really happy to do so.
Were you modeling at that time? What were you doing mostly in your day to day? Were you doing game design, systems design, programming? What was your kind of day to day on the 9-to-5 side?
Yeah, on the 9-to-5 side, so one project we did, which actually really got me started in thinking about games in an art space. We did a project with the Pulitzer Foundation, which is a local prestigious art museum, and we did an interactive project surrounding Coda, which is these African art like reliquaries. Like they're meant to kind of like keep bad spirits away and like just kind of be guardian to just like remains, like just ancestral cool remains. And there was this mathematician who was really like obsessed with these figures, because they would all have these different attributes but also have like commonalities, and they would come from different regions of Africa. And what he did was he made a point cloud just kind of cataloging all these different figures and all their like similarities and differences. And so we made a project kind of exploring that. And so it was like this touch screen that you can, all the Coda figures were on cards, and you could kind of like move them around and group them, and the program would tell you their similarities and That's differences. Neat. Yeah. And it was just kind of like log all this different data about them. And it was just like this amazing exhibit, because it was projected on like four walls in this room, and just at this really neat art gallery. Like, it was just a really cool project. Like,
once yeah, that sounds great.
Project. Yeah. And so, yeah, doing that just gave me a bunch of experience, and I was able to really see the games in an art space. And so I was the lead programmer on that project. And that also was just like such a challenge too, because I wasn't the programmer on the team. Like I was mostly doing technical art on the time.
Yeah.
Like we released a PlayStation 4 game called Smugglecraft, and it was a hovercraft racing game. And yeah, it was a really fun project. And we're really proud of it. And I was the technical artist on it. I controlled all the colors and stuff like that. And so, yeah, the technical art was my like kind of role, but them throwing me as lead programming on this Coda project, that really, I don't know, it just taught me so much. And like that really just kind of boosted me to be able to make just what I make today. Because like,
there's so much
about, yeah, exactly. There's so much about programming that I wouldn't know unless I was like kind of thrown into the deep end on a project like that. And so I'm just so super grateful for that experience.
That's great. So you're finishing up this project, and like, how did the idea for Nor strike you? Like, did it come to you because you were playing with your food, literally? Like, what's the backstory there?
Right. It was kind of coming as just after all these different trips to San Francisco, just kind of seeing the food scene out there, going to like the different like Japan towns and like the Koreatown area of Los Angeles and just all these different locations, and just like trying out different foods. Like, even though I had never been outside of the country, just like kind of seeing these amalgamations of different foods, like in one state, it was kind of just amazing to see. And it's like, I just got to try new things like bubble tea and just like proper ramen. Like, cause up until that point is just like, ramen was just all I known is instant ramen. Cause it's just like, okay, that's pretty much all that Americans like grow up with, like knowing, like understanding about ramen is just like, oh, that's a quick like snack that I have after school. But it's just like kind of discovering the world of like actual, like the actual authentic thing, was kind of just amazing for me. I was just like, whoa, like there's so much going on here. Like having a bento box for the first time. Like it was just like really inspiring. And while at the same time seeing like just on the internet, like just all these like food photography blogs come out, and like also just like appreciation for different aesthetics of food, especially like in anime and things like that. Like, Studio Ghibli and people taking GIFs of the food in Ghibli films and like making them into posts on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Like just kind of those sorts of areas of the internet like sort of inspired me. So I was just like, okay, I'm in a spot where I'm just like learning a lot about visual design. I was just learning shaders and how to make them from scratch and like how to use a visual shader editor. And so I kind of told myself, I was like, okay, we're going to try to make bubble tea in 3D and make it delicious. Like, just make it look delicious. And so I like did that. I made my first version of it and I put it on Twitter. And I remember someone replied, they were saying, whoa, this gives me, like, this made me have just a knee-jerk response of, like, just hunger. Like, I could taste it by looking at it sort of thing. And I became really fascinated with that. I was just like, whoa, okay, how far can we push this?
That's such a cool idea. I mean, as a person who is a huge Japanophile, loves ramen and... I feel like food is like even sushi, for example, you know, like watching someone make sushi, if you get the chance to sit, you know, across from a chef who's actually really great at it, making these beautiful pieces of fish and then immediately eating them and then being able to share that experience with the chef is such a great thing. It, you know, it's funny actually talking about it is making me a little bit sad because of COVID, right? Like I haven't been to eat sushi with people in like 8 months or whatever. Right. And so I guess in a way it's also just like a celebration of that relationship in some ways, you know, when you go to a really great ramen place and the ramen comes out and you're shoving it in your face, right? You look up and everyone behind the line is smiling, right? Because they can see they're giving you that joy.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss it so much. Like I just miss the restaurant experience and just like going, trying different things. It's been so huge for the process of making the game. Like even just going to tiny little cafes, like just seeing the kind of different interior designs and just ways cafes are decorated. And just like all these small things kind of give me just little bits of inspiration, even if I don't realize it. And kind of what I've been doing to replace that feeling is I've been looking at like 4K 60fps like Japan walk videos. Like it's literally just videos of a guy just walking through Japan with a camera, and like there's no narration or anything. It's just an hour of straight like just walking through like somewhere pretty, and it's the best thing.
That's so great. So you made the bubble tea and it's like, all right, this is giving me feels. Then you were like, I'm going to make a game out of this. Like, did you think of it as a game at the time that you started working on it? Were you thinking of it as an art project or like some kind of weird showcase of highly rendered, beautiful, artistic looking food? Like, because it's a really interesting and in my mind, like really fresh kind of idea. But I wouldn't have thought of it as a game, you know, like if you were to submit it to Experimental Gameplay Workshop, I'd be like, yeah, this is exactly the kind of stuff that we show, because it doesn't have necessarily those kinds of like strong mechanical hooks that are visible from the outside. So talk a little bit about how it's interactive, I guess, and like what you were thinking about as you were building that out.
Yeah, so it didn't start as a game at all, actually. It was, it was literally just like art that I was making. And I was making it in Unity because that was just what I knew, right? Like just real-time art. And I wanted to kind of flex my muscles a bit on just making visuals, making shaders and stuff. And so, yeah, it was nothing more than just like a little exercise. But just like seeing the response that came from it was really what kind of made me keep at it and make more. So like after just people responded super high, like super well to the bubble tea, that's when I was like, okay, let's do ramen next, because I had just watched Ponyo. I had seen like the little ramen that they have in Ponyo.
I love Ponyo so much.
Yeah, it's just every Ghibli film, just the visuals are amazing, the food is amazing. And so, yeah, that was my next goal. And so I made that, and it ended up being just like really funny, just like seeing 3D noodles fly around. And it was like really glitchy at first. And that was the first time I've like tweeted my work and kind of blow up, like which like blowing up back at that time for me meant like even getting like 200 likes on something. I was just like, whoa, like that's insane. Like that was huge for me. I was just like, okay, people seem to really like this. And so I just like kept on that. And then what actually made it into a game was someone I knew in the city was throwing a little like kind of arts event, like tech art event. It was called Mimetic Network. And it was my friends Chase and Tyler Matthews. So yeah, Chase Oroz and Tyler Matthews were my friends who were like throwing this little like kind of intersection of tech and art event here in St. Louis. And they were looking for a few game designers to join in and like exhibit their work. This was back in like 2016, 2015 sort of time.
It was going to be like a gallery show or an experience where people could walk through and see lots of different types of stuff, right?
Yeah, just like a little event. And it was held at this co-working space, Tech Artista in St. Louis. And it was just meant to be like this sort of just little, like look at these small artists in St. Louis who are doing kind of just like new, interesting things. And so, yeah, what they were looking for was just like interesting, had something to do with technology and was kind of at that like intersection. And so, they were like, hey, so, yeah, we know you're a game developer and you have some other games, but could you show the food thing like that you've been posting about on Twitter? And I was kind of just like, it's not really interactive at all, but I will see what I can do. Like, that was my actual response. It was like, the event is 2 weeks away. I'll see what I can do. And so kind of just without thinking about it, like this was while I still had the day job, so this was just like a for fun thing for me. I just hooked up some controls to it. Like I just made it to where, okay, if you press buttons on the keyboard, that makes the ramen fall down. And it does basically what it did in the video on Twitter, except you can control when it happens. And so like, that's literally all I did. I just got my keyboard and just like made some buttons. Yeah, just hooked some buttons up to it. And people loved it. Yeah, I don't know. Like at the event, it was just amazing seeing people come up to it and just kind of immediately get it. Like they just saw the keyboard. It was like, okay, I guess this is my only interaction with it. Started pressing keys and then just immediately seeing the response of like a piece of popcorn popping or a noodle falling from the sky. And just the satisfaction of seeing that immediate response to a button press, I think is kind of what solidified it as just this really satisfying experience that a lot of folks actually wanted to play with. And so
wanted to play their food. I mean, this is the thing, right? I mean, like if you do get a chance to travel and try new things, one of the things that's best about traveling is trying the cuisine of places that you visit, whether that's like high cuisine, quote unquote, or just street food or someone's cooking for you, which is my favorite. But there is always that moment where like, if you've never had udon, you don't realize the noodles are going to slip out between your chopsticks until you pick them up and then they slither back down into the bowl, right? Like there's a real physical quality to food, which is something that we all enjoy as kids. And then as we get older, I don't know, maybe we don't give ourselves permission to really enjoy it, you know, as much. Maybe it's like it's we have to be all serious. What kind of controllers did you use when you started out? Was it just like a standard game controller, or did you use other types of input, or what was that like?
Yeah, so at first I was just using a keyboard, and I had one of those fancy like Razer Chroma RGB keyboards, which I actually still have it. That's what the keyboard I use today. Yay. But I won it. This was not something that I was just buying with my money, because I did not have money like that. But I had won it from this like contest at my first GDC. I was volunteering for the IGDA booth, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what actually got me my ticket to GDC, was just doing that.
I was an IGDA scholar, so I'm
oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a lot. And so they were having this contest on the last day. They were just like, okay, put all your business cards in this pile, and like the first one we draw out wins like this prize and this prize. And so yeah, mine was the first drawn, and I was just like, let's go. Like free RGB keyboard. And so and yeah, it's the ones with all the like individual light up keys. And so just having that on hand, I was like, okay, let's make this interesting. So I used that, and I sort of customized it and like programmed it to where only a few keys were lit up, and whenever you press them, like they would kind of like change color and have this reaction. And so that's what I hooked up to the game at first, was just and like I just made the keys that you're supposed to press glow and then turn the rest of them off, and like that's sort of the kind of like draw. And like people got it too. They were just like, okay, yeah. I'm only supposed to press these certain keys.
So you were doing something really important in that early work, which I think is, I mean, it's good to point it out, right? You were making the experience juicy, not just by making the art space juicy and like the animation look cool or weird or funny, but you were also giving them a tactile experience that was rewarding and also guiding, right? You're simplifying the control space so that they didn't feel intimidated by experimenting, which is one of the hardest things to do with games. A lot of people walk up to a new game and they feel almost immediately overwhelmed, stupid, or both, right? And so you were giving them the space to feel playful, even just in that one little tiny aspect.
Yeah. And that's really good that you pointed that out, because that was something that I didn't realize was so huge about this game, was like even to this day demoing it to people. And like if I ever meet a new person, I'll just be like, oh, yeah, I make games, like you should play this weird food game I made. Usually the first response will be just like, oh, I'm not good at video games. I'll watch, but like, oh, I'm not good at video games. I'll probably be bad at it. So like, and they sound reluctant to play because of that. And I'm just like, no, trust me, you'll be into this. Like, trust me, you can do this. Sort of thing. And so, I'll just like almost force them to just be like, no, just sit down, play this game. Like, I'll just hand them the controller and just be like, here you go. And like kind of seeing that initial reluctance followed by just being really into it, like, is just the greatest feeling, because it's just like, okay, you just made this accessible. You just made it to where someone who felt like they couldn't do something like is now really enjoying it. Now just like they're really having a good time with it. And so,
well, and that's, I mean, in a way that's a mirror of your own journey in making games, right? And I think this is one of the things that games can do, is that they can translate our personal goals, you know, of creativity, expression, and spending time with other people having fun, and then we can build something that does that for other people. And that's like, what a gift, right? You know, it feels so amazing to be able to translate that into something that's tactile for someone else. When did you start thinking about really commercially releasing it? I mean, when did it stop becoming a side project and become something that was going to be on a PlayStation? That's a big leap, right? From your friends being like, could you please put this in our little art show, to now, like something big must have happened. What was it?
Right. Well, it was. So during GDC 2017. So at that point, it was kind of a game, right? Like it was. It had controls to it. I was now using, instead of the keyboard, I was using the MIDI Fighter, which is it's a MIDI controller with 16 arcade buttons on it, and it was made to kind of reflect video games within the music production space, but I was starting to really get familiar with MIDI controllers and just starting to get an interest in like just audio production. But like knowing I didn't really have just the inherent ability of making music. I was just like, okay, I'll just take this interest and apply it to games, something I already know. And so I hooked up the MIDI fighter to the game. And so that just added a whole new layer of like tactility to it. Folks really enjoyed just pressing a huge arcade button and just seeing people fly around. Like it was a great experience. But then during GDC 2017, the game was covered on Polygon, which I really wasn't expecting.
You got interviewed by Nick and there was a lot of cool stuff that happened, right?
Yeah. So, I had just tweeted out, I was like, okay, I'm at GDC. If anyone wants to play with my just like weird noodle game, hit me up. And like, that was basically all like it. And then I attached a GIF of the noodles flying around and like just a bunch of people retweeted it. And so a lot of people actually found me or just like, yo, I want to play this.
I want to play the ramen game.
yeah. And so it just kind of became this like little meme. And yeah, then Nick DM'd me and was just like, hi, I want to play the game. Like, can we do that? And I was like, oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. Nick is awesome.
And, so we did that and we recorded a video on it, and which like I didn't even know there was going to be a whole like video producer. I didn't know what kind of interview it was going to be, and yeah, it was just amazing. Just like I had my like sort of windbreaker on and just like all my most colorful clothing I just happened to be wearing that day. I really wasn't planning on it, but I just happened to put together this crazy look. And so that's the thing that to this day, like all the comments are like talking about. They're just like, whoa,
like check out your glitter. You look amazing.
Yeah. It's like, who's this game developer with wearing the pastels like all over? Like what's going on?
It is a pretty sick look. I mean, it's a good kit, I'm saying.
Thank you. I it was a really iconic day for me, I feel like.
So then, you just kept going with it, and eventually you started talking to PlayStation, you pulled together a team and a budget, and then, I mean, there's a lot of steps that go into getting from that, right, to where you are now. Did you do it on your own? Have you had any mentorship? Are people, like, are you still kind of feeling like it's mostly just you? Like, how did that part of the process transpire for you? Because it's, I think a lot of people don't understand how that stuff works, right, especially younger people that want to break in.
For the most part, I just really didn't know kind of what went into the business side of things, and I had to really learn as I go. But from that interview, it just really kind of gave me the platform I needed to sort of run with the idea. So after that video came out, I then did a Kickstarter for the game, and this was kind of as things weren't really working out with the local studio I was working at. We released our game, our hovercraft racing game, and it unfortunately didn't do as well as we were hoping. And so though they loved my
story,
common story in the game scene, right? So unfortunately they had to let me go because they couldn't afford to keep the team as big as it was. And so we're really cool to this day. But I kind of took that as an opportunity to be like, okay, like now it's time to like get serious about this weird food game, right? So that's when I did the Kickstarter, and to amazing success too, just like 115% funded.
That's great.
Yeah, it was amazing. And like, it really allowed me to just work on the game full time and really take it seriously as a project. And kind of, I guess I never really talked about just the aftermath of the Kickstarter. It was really great, but like going on for as long as I have been with production, it like just kind of turned out to not be enough, like for as big as the project was getting.
Yeah.
Mostly in terms of like kind of the expectation of like it gaining more and more traction, it getting a ton of exhibits, and then me just being the solo developer, just being like, this bought me some time, but like like strangely not enough time. Like the yeah. amount of money that came from it seemed like unfathomable, but just like when you take out like taxes and all the like rewards and stuff like that, it's just like, oh snap. Like really all it bought me was like a little bit of time. And so it's just like, I did actually need a little bit more help to actually get it out there. And so that's kind of when panic came
also in. I was going to say, when you have a successful Kickstarter or something like this that people want to show and it becomes the new hotness, then suddenly everybody also wants you to come to their events and they want you to give talks and they want you to show your game, right? Which takes time from development, which is money.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just kind of hard managing everything at once. So like while being one person, just like traveling to all these events while making the game, while doing business dev, while figuring out how to do taxes, like as a solo business owner for the first time. And a lot of first steps to where like I'm now in a much better position. If I were to redo a Kickstarter, like I would do it so much better than I did the first time. But just all those first time things kind of added up and like really just like sucked away a lot of the time that that was meant for making the game. But just panic kind of came along at the exact right time. And they were like just super interested in the project. Like it was completely random. Like we were introduced through a mutual connection that I had just made. And we went to a conference, Layers conference in San Jose, like we both happened to be at. It was me and Cable. Cool. And so, yeah, he was showing me the play date. I was just like, this is awesome. And then, and then just they all reached out later on Twitter. It was just like, yo, you need anything? And I was just like, yo, please. it was just like just an amazing like just set of circumstances.
So when you look back now and you see yourself getting ready to release this title on the PlayStation, you've moved through all these changes and you've had all these firsts, like what would be something that you would say to someone who's say 20 years old, you know, 4 or 6 years before you are, say, and like starting to get into it? What would be the advice that you would have based on your experience so far? And then you can listen to this interview 10 years from now and laugh about all the things you've learned since then. But
oh yeah, definitely. Well, gosh, yeah, even in the last like 5 years of working on this project, just so much has changed. I've learned so much. And just something I would tell to someone getting started is write down all your wildest dreams, like just all the dreams that you would put into your project, write that down and then like cut it down to like a fourth of the size and then like start cutting even more than that. Like, just, I don't know, we're just, everything takes longer than you would ever expect. Just everything. And it's just kind of the nature of life. And especially if you're someone like me, who's it's just like hard for me to stay on task. Like know your strengths and weaknesses too. Yeah. It's just like one of my strengths is just like, I don't know, just being able to really kind of tap into the inner muse and just like come away with an idea and like, I don't know, get out of artist block. Like I've gotten out of artist block so many times to the point where it's like, I almost have like a routine of it. It's just like, okay, I don't have any ideas. I know what to do now. I just need to like order some food, sit back, take a shower, just like chill out. And like, I don't know, your subconscious just does a lot of the work.
That's so true.
Yeah. Just like kind of, I don't know, take care of yourself and just realize that things take a long time. So like start cutting away. If you manage your time well enough, you'll be able to get to some amazing things in your project that you never would have thought like would happen from them. Also just like be nice to people. It gets you really far in terms of just like making friends and just making connections. And like, I don't know, it's just amazing when it's just like folks, I don't know, when you kind of feel that community love, just like you'll be so shocked at like the amazing ways people come through for you, like just without even asking. Just like if you kind of share that common goal and just like of just like creating a great space for people. So yeah, I don't know, just like keep that energy going.
Well, those are really great pieces of advice. As a person who teaches young people how to make games and spent a very long time in school making games, you know, you can say it out loud, but I think it's also one of those things that people learn by doing. And you've learned so much already just in the short period of time that you've been making games. Like, it's really inspiring. Like, I think you're really doing something fantastic. And of course, obviously, I mean, I'm a huge fan of all the food that you're that you're working with. So.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear.
Very, very, very excited to see it. What do you think you want to do in terms of like promoting this game and like thinking about this game in this context? I mean, it's an interesting time to release a game, and there's not going to be a lot of people that can give you advice about how to market it or get it out there during COVID, because very few people have had to do that yet still. So like, what kinds of things are you thinking about now that you're approaching the end?
Yeah. Kind of a focus on just how valid like online spaces are. Like, I think just having a pandemic and having to quarantine has really just shown a lot of people the importance of or just like how valuable it is to have an online space for people to just like gather and hang out. Just having a Discord call, like having online shows is another thing. Like, I've been to a lot of like virtual Minecraft concerts during this whole thing, and that's been amazing. I don't know, it gives a similar feeling of just like I don't know, just like almost a diluted version of the GDC experience of just like being like, oh whoa, there's this person that I really admire right there in the same like, I don't know, virtual space as me, represented by a like blocky Minecraft character. Like, I don't know, it's really funny to say, but I don't know, it's just like, this is a really ridiculous year, and I feel like ridiculous experiences like that are valid more than ever.
It is really a ridiculous year, and I think in a way it makes what you're making even more appropriate for this time. You know, the stuff that I've been working on personally during COVID has all been about trying to connect with people, have fun, and be somewhat silly in response to what is an overwhelming cognitive load of stress about all kinds of systems that we see are not working, right? And like, this is just like, I don't know. I hate to say it, but I feel like your game is really wholesome, and it gives really good vibes. And I'm just really glad that you're joining us, and that you're taking up the space that you need to take up and being you in the way that you are with this work. It's really valuable. And I don't know. I just feel really grateful that we have the chance now to share through the internet, not just our work, but our ethos and the way that we can create in the face of really overwhelming anxiety and stress.
Important. Right. And I'm taking it upon myself to just put out good vibes right now. Like, I'm just like, this is what we need in our art. Like, just happy, good vibes. Yeah, just it's a really stressful time. And it's like, I like what we were saying about ridiculousness too, just like kind of just the silly and ridiculous, I feel like, is just really in the zeitgeist right now. Like, memes are becoming reality, and like, I feel like this is what we have to kind of embrace. Like, reality seems like a Onion article nowadays. And so I feel like, I don't know, just like hearing a bunch of the news surrounding like TikTok and stuff like that too. It's just like, yeah, this is completely ridiculous. And so, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just kind of like, okay, why not have this weird food game made by a creator of color? Like,
yeah, why not? Let's
go with that. Like, yeah, just like, I belong here too, if you're all going to talk about just like ridiculous stuff.
Let's just do it. Let's make it more crazy. Let's make it more colorful. Let's bring more people in. You know, the rising tide floats all boats. And I think a lot of us have the opportunity to give back and to support. And so I guess, how can people support you? Where are you on Twitter? Like, what's your website? When can they expect to see Noor? That kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. So my website is terrifyingjellyfish.com. That's where you can find just all my art and stuff. You can find more about the game at food.game, which is kind of the most amazing URL
Smart.
That I've ever seen. I'm so glad we got that. I was just like, yo, like, is that actually like free? Like, can we can just do that. And so food.game. I'm on Twitter at _TJ5, like spelled out. I'm kind of just everywhere. Like, you can just look up TJ Hughes or Terrifying Jellyfish. It's weird to be at a point where you can like Google me.
Yeah, get used to it.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I'll have that stop before like dates or whatever. Like, they'll be like, "Oh yeah, I Googled you," and I'm just like, "What do you mean?" Like, you can do that, and stuff pops up. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Well, I said I wouldn't do it, but I'm gonna go ahead and do it. I'm gonna press the hype button for you.
Oh, there's the hype button. There it is. I'm so glad. Of course, my interview would have trap.
Yes,
horns.
You get the cheap toy hype button because it is so fun and awesome to talk to you and be energized by your positivity and your creativity, really, in the face of so much weird bullshit. I'm just really glad that you took the time to talk to us today, TJ. And like, you're not terrifying at all. I don't know why you named yourself that.
you see. Oh my gosh, I love just the name Terrifying Jellyfish because it's so just like it throws people off so much. Yeah. And like the logo, it's like the logo is a jellyfish trying to be terrifying, but it just falls so flat. But also, when you think about it, a jellyfish could kill you. Like the tentacles, like the stings, those are fatal. So I don't know. Yeah, that's a whole.
It's a whole thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's analogous to real life, but yeah, I don't know. Jellyfishes can be terrifying, but they're also very cute. So
yes. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, TJ. I really appreciate you. I wish you the best in your journey, and I cannot wait to find more.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us for the Game Maker's Notebook. For more information on the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, our podcasts, and our other initiatives, please visit www.interactive.org.